humanitarian volunteers that were supposed to go on the Freedom Flotilla, which is a mission that was supposed to deliver humanitarian aid to Gaza and break the illegal siege on Gaza. This ship that was supposed to be boarded today and tomorrow has been attacked 4 hours ago, so half past 12, in the middle of the night. 30 humanitarian volunteers are currently on this ship. The ship was attacked. It is currently on fire. The ship is sinking, and all SOS calls are not being answered. This is a war crime being committed in international waters just outside of Malta.
Guys, this is an emergency. We need everyone to contact the Malta government right now. At 12:30 a.m., our ship, the Freedom Flotilla, was attacked by two drones. Explosions. You can go see the video footage on our Instagram page. Please, everybody, put pressure on the Malta government to save the crew. There's about 30 souls that had to abandon ship. The ship is on fire. It's taking water. Please, everybody, all hands on deck.
We are talking that we are here right now in Malta. We've been here for several days preparing this Freedom Flotilla to break the siege towards Gaza. So we are talking about an attack with drones in international waters in Europe. We are not saying that we are surprised by the enemy, but we need your voices more than ever. We need you to help us.
Condemnations are pouring in over an Israeli drone attack that hit a Gaza aid ship in international waters. Hamas called the attack an act of state terrorism and maritime piracy. It urged global condemnation and immediate action by the UN, especially the Security Council, to hold Israel accountable in international courts. Separately, the Palestinian Islamic Jihad said the attack endangered the lives of over 30 humanitarian activists seeking to help the oppressed people of Gaza. The movement called the strike a clear insult to all human and moral values. The Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah said the attack on a humanitarian mission shows Israel has no respect for international law and conventions. It also slammed international silence amid Israel's crimes. The Euromed Human Rights Monitor also condemned the Israeli attack as flagrant violation of UN Charter.
An intentional strike on a civilian aid ship in international waters violates the UN Charter, the Law of the Sea, and the Rome Statute, which prohibit attacks on humanitarian objects. This attack fits a well-documented pattern, the use of force to block aid ships headed to Gaza long before they reach its shores. Maritime relief has been targeted before. This isn't the first time.
The organization also urged an independent and transparent investigation under Maltese jurisdiction and with the UN participation. It stressed that perpetrators of such violation must be held accountable to the account. The Human Rights Monitor stressed the failure to take action will only encourage further attacks on humanitarian missions and worsen the catastrophe unfolding in Gaza. Euromed further demanded guarantees to ensure maritime safety for humanitarian relief to Gaza. Well, now for more details and more in-depth on the story, we are joined by both our correspondents, Muti Abu Musabih. They're joining us from Deir al-Balah and from Belfast. Mr. Farah Hughes, journalist, activist, and director of Palestine Aid at Belfast. I'd like to thank both of you for joining us during this special coverage. Muti, I do want to get started with you. In considerations and in regards to this flotilla that was attempting to bring you much and dire needed humanitarian aid there to the Gaza Strip, how do the people of Gaza at the time see that while people on the outside are actually attempting to break the siege, that the Israeli entity continues, as you all well know, to break it and not follow any international law and again get away with it?
Yeah, absolutely. The Palestinian people are still devastated with the ongoing genocidal attacks carried out by the Israeli occupation forces and the deliberate Israeli attacks that are still aiming at cutting off all lifeline for the Palestinian people, as if it's not enough for the Israeli occupation forces to keep pounding elsewhere in Gaza, still claiming more lives of the Palestinian people, preventing the Palestinian civilians of having any access to the basic humanitarian essentials and needs, as they are still closing Gaza crossings for more than two consecutive months in a row. The current situation is still extremely horrific for the Palestinian people. However, the Israeli occupation forces have proceeded to, as you know, to take more actions against the Palestinian people. they have attacked that flotilla. And as you know, the main aim of this attack is just to prevent the Palestinian people of having any access to the basic humanitarian essentials and needs. Even those who are still thinking of mitigating the suffering of the Palestinian people in Gaza Strip, they are still targeted by the Israeli occupation forces. So this reflects the constant policy of the Israeli occupation forces of weaponizing the humanitarian supplies against the Palestinian people here in Gaza Strip. They are still, as you know, cementing the grip against the Palestinian people here in Gaza Strip, despite the fact that the Palestinian people are living these unprecedented humanitarian conditions. Nothing has been left for the Palestinian people in Gaza Strip after the Israeli occupation forces destroyed everything in Gaza Strip and have prevented anything of from entering Gaza Strip. And now they are still attacking the solidarity campaigns that are still attempting and seeking for providing the Palestinian people with the tiny amounts in order to alleviate their suffering amid these catastrophic humanitarian conditions. So this comes in the context of the genocidal policy embraced and used by the Israeli occupation forces. And by the way, this is not taking place far away from the ongoing genocidal attacks that are still taking place here in Gaza Strip. They are still killing the Palestinian people here in Gaza Strip. The wholesaling of the Palestinian women and children is still underway and abated, having more intensified attacks like what happened over the past couple of hours in Jabalia refugee camp after the Israeli warplanes destroyed and pounded a populated house there, killing 8 Palestinian civilians. In addition to that, 3 Palestinian civilians were slaughtered in Al Burej refugee camp after the Israeli warplanes targeted a sport club there, which was, as you know, taken shelter by the displaced people. So we are talking about ongoing atrocities that are still being, as you know, perpetrated day and night against the Palestinian people. Roughly 40 Palestinian civilians have been slaughtered since dawn hours, still just moment in light of those ongoing and accelerated Israeli airstrikes and attacks. And to be honest, that these brutalizations and attacks are still carried out against the Palestinian people represent a real manifestation and a practical translation of the Israeli attitude to intensify and expand the attacks against Gaza Strip, because, you know, according to the latest updates, that the Israeli regime has turned down the proposals that were put forward by the mediators in order to reach a ceasefire agreement. And they have claimed that they are going to expand their military operations against Gaza Strip. So this is how they are still expanding their military operations against Gaza Strip, having more genocidal and deadly strikes and attacks, expanding the military offensives against multiple areas of Gaza Strip and taking more
exactly
lives.
Exactly, Moti.
I'm gonna
get right back to you, Moti. But with what those updates you gave us, I'm gonna move over to our guest, Mr. Hughes. Thank you very much for being patient with us. From based off what our correspondent there in Gaza at the moment is giving us of the latest developments, as we know the dire humanitarian situation, and of course, in addition, as he did mention, the increase and the escalated horrific atrocities continued out by the Israeli entity. I do want to ask you, Mr. Hughes, a moment ago we had some records by the activists that were present there on the flotilla, and they said that SOS distress signals were not being answered. I mean, where's the Maltese government? Where's the European? We know they were in the international seas and waters, but where are the people? Why were they not answering their SOS distress signals, in your opinion?
Well, I think it's obviously a case of the people who are involved in the governments are probably in favour of the continued Zionist aggression, slaughter, genocide, and Holocaust being visited upon the people of Gaza and Lebanon and Syria and the West Bank. I think it proves again that they are being called out in their complicity. I'm not surprised that the book was attacked. I don't think anyone's surprised. Very reminiscent of what happened with the Mavi Marmara in 2010 when it was boarded in international waters and they murdered 9 of the humanitarian aid workers that were trying to bring wheelchairs and trying to bring medicine back in 2010 to break the siege and break the blockade. I believe that this is attempted murder. I believe that the people responsible for this should be prosecuted, should be brought before the Hague for war crimes. I have no real genuine hope that that will happen, but total disregard for the lives of the people on the boat is just a mirror of the genocide and the slaughter that's continuing in Gaza. Every minute of every hour of every day, the people are suffering. An Israeli minister, I believe, said not so much as a grain of wheat would enter into Gaza. We're talking about one boat with humanitarian aid. There are hundreds, if not thousands, of vehicles, of lorries that have humanitarian aid. And that is simply food, that is medicine, that is fuel, that is water that the Israeli Zionist regime is refusing to allow into Gaza. So not only are they using starvation as a weapon of subjugation and as a war crime against the Palestinian people, they are prepared to murder anyone who has the courage or the temerity to stand up to this fascist, racist regime and to do what every humanitarian should do, which is come to the aid of people in need.
Well, gentlemen, I'd like to thank you both very much. Our correspondent, Mutia Abu-Musabih, there joining us from Deir el-Balah, and from Belfast, Mr. Farah Hughes, journalist, activist, and director of Palestine Aid Belfast. Thank you. It was a pleasure to have you with us. The Yemeni armed forces have launched a fresh missile attack on the Israeli-occupied territories in response to the Israeli regime's atrocities in Gaza.
In support of the oppressed Palestinian people, and in rejection of the crime of genocide being waged by the Israeli enemy, backed by American support against our people in Gaza, the missile force of the Yemeni armed forces carried out a military operation targeting the Israeli enemies. Ramat David Air Base, east of the occupied area of Haifa, with a Palestine 2 hypersonic ballistic missile.
The spokesperson said that the missile successfully reached its target, adding that Israeli interception systems failed to confront it. The attack set off sirens across the port city of Haifa and parts of the northern occupied territories. Reports say residents in Haifa and several other regions fled to shelters. According to Israeli media, flights also halted at Israel's Ben Gurion airport following the missile strike. The Yemeni armed forces vowed that their anti-Israel military operations will continue until the aggression against Gaza stops and the siege on the Strip is lifted. Meanwhile, thousands of Yemeni people have held a new rally in Saada to show their solidarity with Palestinians. The protesters carried Yemeni and Palestinian flags, chanting slogans in condemnation of Israeli crimes in Gaza and deadly U.S. aggression against Yemen. They expressed support for the Yemeni armed forces as well. Yemenis have been holding pro-Palestine rallies almost every Friday since the beginning of the genocidal war on Gaza in October 2023. We were earlier joined by our correspondent Yusuf Modi from the Yemeni capital Sana'a to hear more about the Yemeni army's recent missile attack on an Israeli airbase.
Israeli air defense systems, they failed to intercept it, which is the case with these Palestinian 2 hypersonic missiles that are launched from Yemen, and that's because of the high speed of such a weapon. It travels, it's able to reach occupied Palestine from Yemen within the span of 11 minutes, and that's top speed. That's Mach 15 speed, which is unheard of in this part of the world, in this region. Yemen is only a country of a few nations that possesses such hypersonic missile capability. But the message in these weapons is very clear, and that is Yemen is continuing its support, its military support, for Palestine against the Israeli genocide until the genocide comes to an end. Despite the U.S. attacks on Yemen, despite the British Army entering the war and sending its own aircraft carrier into the Red Sea, despite Trump rhetoric that they are weakening or destroying the Yemeni army's military capabilities, all of this has proven to be just rhetoric by the U.S. President Trump and his allies and White House officials, who are just now realizing that they made a big mistake.
Well, thank you very much for this hour's headlines. For more updates, please stay tuned to World News. Goodbye for now.
from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
It's the show where we discuss the most topical of topics, the most controversial of controversies, and the most important affairs of affairs.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome back to a very new episode of Back to Reality. Well, this is Asma. Once more, I have the honor to be your host. And then again, we have two very dear guests, Sister Zainab and Sister Nasreen. Well, as the ritual of this program goes, I would like you to introduce yourself pretty briefly.
Assalamu alaikum. I am Zainab Askari, and I have studied master's in linguistics. I have been studying Hausa for the past 10 years and also teaching and writing.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I'm Nasreen, and right now, I'm a principal of a school. I have studied English literature, and after that, I went to Hausa to study Islamic, science. And then after that, I went back to school and teaching again.
Well, the world is full of problems and issues, and as modernity comes in the middle, there are many question marks. And there are many people who do believe that religion stops at a time. There are many people who accuse religion for not being responsible or for not being able to respond to the questions of the time. But we know the truth is totally different. Now I would like you to start it this way, that do you believe religion could change to fit modernity or could change to fit the modern world and its concerns?
Religion usually seen as traditional.
Mm-hmm.
But has always
something belonging to the ancient old
right.
ages.
Right. But has always had lessons that are timeless.
Mm-hmm.
They don't change with time. I let's talk about justice, for example. Justice, what was taught then or what was important then is important now and will be important in terms of justice in the modern times as well.
Yeah.
So, yes, we have some of the modern things today. The religion actually adapts, I guess, sometimes subtle, sometimes very drastic to these modernization things. Let me give you example, for example, and I think that's important too at some places if done in balance. For example, let's take the example of tech. Today we have sermons of or lecturers of Islamic lecturers or something that is available online. So using tech, using one of the tools of modernization for those timeless lessons, there should not be some I don't know, doubt about it. So even if there are modern issues, it's not like religion was not responsible, religion was not answerable. It is us who was not able to deduce that, you know.
Yeah.
That's what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala
to
says,
make a compatibility between
so much
in modernization Quran. And between and within the religion,
like, yeah,
the realm
for example,
of religion.
Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, أَفَلَا يَتَفَكَّرُونَ. Why don't you think? Why don't you ponder? Had I pondered much, had I thought much, maybe I would have able to deduce that Islam
mm-hmm.
has answers for all things. Even, I don't know, maybe 10 years later from now, some modernization will come up with something. But I would say that Islam does not have an answer. It's me who has not pondered much to deduce that answer.
Okay, Sister Nasreen,
yeah.
Since I know that when you introduced yourself, you're working in a school and then you have many students,
mm-hmm.
which means you have many daughters.
Exactly.
So these daughters have got a lot of questions.
Yes.
And their question has got a lot to do with the modern world. So
mm-hmm.
when they come to you and if they ask you, about, for example, in science, this happens, but it has not been mentioned in religion. How would you justify her that she can find the answer to her questions in religion?
First of all, let me tell you something which is very important, and that is religion is timeless.
Yeah.
There's no time for it. It doesn't have any expiry date. Say,
mm-hmm.
okay, it's over, finished, let's go. No, no, it's with us.
But
the
you
one
know,
who has
this is something that we believe in. There
you know,
are many people in the world who do not believe in this. They do believe that religion we attribute timelessness to religion and its rules and instructions. This is what they claim. If we want to justify these people, how would we just help them? I mean, like, are there any books to prove that, yes, religion is timeless?
Exactly. You know what? Let me tell you something. Actually, engagement with modernity is something that is essential.
Yeah, it's a part of our life.
And Islam also itself, the religion itself, encourages us. Or let me say that it encourages something like we call it as ijtihad, which is called rational reasoning. Yeah. I think this is the better, you know, definition for it, maybe. Ijtihad or rational reasoning to address new challenges while actually it's preserving the principles.
Yeah.
So that is a very important thing. We have lots of scholars here now, in, you know, in just here in my own country. I know lots of, you know.
So your questions are not going to remain unanswered because there are scholars always out there for you to get your answers from the questions that you have.
Let me tell you. Wait.
Okay. Since this
I want to give you an example. Wait.
For the example, let's go for a break and then we'll come back to hear the example.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Back to Reality.
So, we were talking about the fact that many people say that you guys who believe in religion and timelessness of religion, you attribute this timelessness to its rules. Mm-hmm. But then you said there is this rational reasoning and there are scholars out there that could help you figure out your questions. And then you were about to give an example. By the way, you're listening to Back to Reality. Sister Zainab and Sister Nasrin are in here and I'm enjoying the discussion with them.
Example, the first one, which is one of the, you know, vivid. I mean, it's so, you know, transparent enough. And we
conspicuous.
Have a, yeah. One of them is like this. Medical ethics, or digital finance. What do you think about this too? Of course, both of them require scholarly insight.
Bio even ethics.
Exactly.
This is very interesting.
Like, for example, we have IVF or the digital currencies to be mentioned. As Sister mentioned, I think like it's not like, okay, there was a digital currency thing that came a couple of years ago, and there's this IVF thing that came, and inheritance through these things, you know, surrogacy and all. I think we have literally the jurists have worked very, very hard. We have so many scholarly articles there that give Quranic references, that give references from the Ahadith, and also the... When we have Islamic rulings and Islamic commandments, they are not confined to the Quran and Ahadith. There's another source that is intellect. So what about this ruling? There were not these bikes some hundreds of years ago.
Yeah.
So doesn't Islam have the answer? Definitely Islam has the answer.
To sum it up, I would put it this way, that religion has got this flexibility that could fit itself to different times and to different conditions.
It can.
Yeah.
So can I add something about...
Surely.
Imam Khomeini said something which I like it so much, you know. He says, we must be equipped with modern science, but remain anchored in faith. Yeah. So we can say that Islam... Or, you know, our religion is not against, you know, modernity. You can have a...
Or improvement or development.
Exactly. It's a part of your life. You need to have a, you know, a comfortable life. You need to have those stuffs, those tools, everything.
Yeah.
You need the modernism. Modernism is a part of our life. I cannot live outside and using a horse instead of car.
I cannot actually exclude myself from the modern world.
You know, unfortunately, there are people, unfortunately, I don't say that this is right, this is terribly wrong, that we have people nowadays, and they say, no, Islam is against modernism, and I'm not
it's
using
not
car at
Islam is
all.
Basically, I think
do you believe in this?
No, I think religion is, you know, adapting itself towards a technology, like I said, using the videos, sermons in the beginning of the lecture. So adapting itself to different modernization techniques or texts or tools is important at the same time. But, adapting to modernization too much can dilute authenticity.
So unfortunately, this is the finalement of today's episode. But then, very briefly, we're going to draw some attention to the main features of our scholars, like the adaptability and the flexibility and the knowledge are the main things that we have to talk about. We have to trust them. See, religion has always asked us to go back to the scholars for every single questions you have. Right now, though, we do not have the direct access to Imam Mahdi, ajalallah farajah. So we have to ask our questions from the scholars, whom we trust.
The jurists.
Yeah. So their knowledge does not come from their own interpretations.
Right.
They go through too much of academic years
that
of studying.
They reach a level of ijtihad, as sister already mentioned.
Yeah, please
earlier.
Explain on that so that it clarifies for those people who are just listening to
for
us.
Example, if you're going for one PhD in your life, it takes your whole life,
exactly,
whole time.
Yeah.
To reach a level of ijtihad takes some kind of some 60 PhDs like that. So a level of ijtihad is a very, very high level of struggle in the field of religion.
And they're not studying ancient stories or ancient stuff. No, they are getting adapted with the new concerns and stuff that are related to the new world.
Yeah, they are addressing new ethical challenges like AI. They are addressing climate changes. They are addressing issues like biotech.
Digital currency that you already mentioned previously.
And communication and like in the digital platforms today that we have.
So our scholars are not detached scholars from the real world. They are living in the real world, knowing about the concerns of modernization, of what are the concerns that
they are
a modern
with us.
Exactly.
They are with us. We are in the same century together. Mm-hmm.
And they
put
themselves, I mean, the soul, the ego aside. Because when you are about to give rules to people, you have to put yourself, your own interpretation, your emotional self aside.
Yeah, they have a responsibility, you know, toward people. Let me tell you something about my husband. Actually, my husband works in a, you know, place which is, you know, lots of scholars are there. And then sometimes they answer the questions. Some people, you know, send emails. Some people send, you know, messages. And then
from different parts of the world,
exactly, from different parts of the world, they, you know, ask this scholar their question. And when you just listen to their question and their stories, you get shocked. It's totally complicated. And then when they answer it perfectly and intelligently, you might just say, oh my goodness, how they know it. So it seems that they have a very, very, you know,
high level of
knowledge. They have a source. And then they have studied for decades. So that's why they know how to solve this problem. It's a puzzle, which is terrible. But they help you to, you know, continue your life. For example, once it was about, you know, the question was something about children. I don't remember exactly. Child was born and then they didn't know who was the mother. And then there was a, you know,
a very complicated Indian drama.
It was perfect. When you were just listening to the answer.
Yeah.
And then I was shocked, truly shocked at that time. And I asked my husband, how come? How he could answer this question perfectly and wisely. So, you know, you see how much they can help us at this time. So we can say that Allah, God, the one who has created me, he never left me alone. He never leaves me alone.
That's why Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam have always clarified it for us that whenever we have any problem, we have to go and seek refuge to the scholars of our religion, to the people that we trust the most, because they have this knowledge and shrewdness of adaptability and flexibility to get up to date with the concerns of the time and of the age. Yes, religion may put on a modernized cloak or dress up like with modernity, but the essence is still the same essence that Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam have taught us. That is the main ingredient of the true religion that we might actually go for different questions related to that. This was all. Thank you, Sister Nasreen, and thank you, Sister Zainab. This was all for today. I hope you have enjoyed that. Until another episode, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya Allah, Ya Rabb al-Alamin, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Rabbi, let the ummah rise again. Ya Allah, Ya Rabb al-Alamin, رحمن يا رحيم يا ربي التي أما رايزك لتصي دايلايتك once again.
Iran. The province of Qom in Iran is to the south of Tehran on a low plain. Our destination is the small village of Kahak, that's 30 kilometers from the provincial capital of Qom. Kahak is where one of the most influential Islamic philosophers, theologians, and mystics of the 16th and 17th centuries, Sadruddin Muhammad Shirazi, known as Mullah Sadra, lived during his exile. The abstract subject of philosophy is, in a way, about the deepest desires of the heart that wants to unveil the truth of who we are and the nature of reality, all in pursuit of wisdom. Mullah Sadra became famous as a keen thinker who was the culminating figure of the major revival of philosophy in Iran in the Safavid period.
Mullah Sadra has written a great deal during his lifetime. One of his more notable works is the Asfar, his magnum opus, The Four Journeys, that contains the bulk of his philosophical thoughts. Ideas that were highly influenced by a personal mysticism bordering on the aesthetic, which he experienced during his 15-year retreat in this house.
The house is bright with light, with a high star-vaulted dome that has a skylight at its apex and perforated brickwork all around that let in the rays of the sun. Some even have colored panes. The walls are decorated with simple plaster designs and molding. The main building isn't the only attraction here. To the northwestern side of the courtyard, there's a special traditional workshop you shouldn't overlook. Oil pressing houses, or asarkhanes in Farsi, had always played an important role in the lives of the people of old Persia. The required herbal oils were extracted from flowers, fruits, leaves, and most importantly, oil seeds through traditional methods. An occupation that was deeply rooted in ancestral knowledge with a history of more than 3,000 years.
It was made in the Safavid period. The interesting thing about it is that even though it hasn't been greased for 50 years, ever since the workshop was closed, I can still move it with one finger. This wheel is a part of a device that's the traditional equivalent of the modern-day cotton gin. In the old days, they would place a long wooden handle inside this hole, at the other end of which you had an animal, usually a cow or a horse, or, believe it or not, a camel. As the animal went round axis in a circle, it would turn that wheel down there, thus rotating this stone. They would place cotton balls inside the hole, and as the stone rotated, it would separate the cotton seeds from the cotton fiber. The seeds would then be gathered and moved for oil extraction.
All the different techniques used for oil extraction were based on two major steps. The first step required mashing the seeds with a large weight, in this case, a round stone crusher that rolled on its basin.
After all the oily seeds were crushed, they'd be scooped up and placed in a basket over there. This huge tree trunk would then act as a lever, pressing down on the remains and squeezing all the oil out from the bottom.
the extracted oil was used for cooking and also as lighting fuel to make soap and, more importantly, for medicinal purposes. In the Iranian culture, halvardé, which is a kind of sesame paste, is often eaten with a sweet syrup known as shire. At the far end of the workshop, there's a room that was used to prepare both halvardé and shire at the same time. The syrup would then be filtered through big clay vases. At this stage, the clear syrup was still quite runny, so it was boiled until it became thick enough. I don't think saying losing ancestral knowledge could be as devastating as losing an entire species is going overboard. Today's modern world has come about by combining ancestral knowledge with ever-developing technology. Without ancestral knowledge, we would have nothing. This is Golnar Farnoudi for Iran.
Christianity has a long history in Iran, dating back to the early years of the faith. However, Christians have always been a minority in the country. Most of them are Armenians, and many of the oldest Armenian churches, monasteries, and chapels are located in Iran.
We have in Tehran city 7 acting churches and 4 chapels.
St. Gevorg or St. George Church is located in downtown Tehran near a small bazaar called Qawam-ud-Dowleh. It was built in the late 1700s during the Safavid era, although it was not officially designated as a church for about 50 years. Now you may be surprised that in the maze of the narrow alleys of the old neighborhoods in downtown Tehran, you can find even more signs of religious tolerance and interfaith dialogue that date back several centuries.
The first church that was ever built in Tehran is located in one of the oldest neighborhoods of the capital. And as I've come to find out, there's an interesting story behind it too.
The Church of St. Thaddeus and Bartholomeus was built by Armenian artisans and craftsmen who had come from Isfahan to decorate the royal residence of the Qajar kings, the Gulistan Palace. They settled in this neighborhood and their community began to grow. A mass is held here on the first Friday of every month. There's also a special religious service held once a year on a day dedicated to this church, which provides the opportunity to visit a small cemetery behind it, where many personalities of the time are buried.
The Church of St. Thaddeus and Bartholomeus and St. Kevork, or St. George, as we may say, they are the oldest churches. And they were the first churches when the Armenian communities started its communal life in Tehran.
St. Minas Church is actually the only building remaining from a large fortress where the Armenian community of Vanak village were settled. Even today, the neighborhood hosts a large number of Armenians who are members of this local church. Many old documents are available in the church and highlight the important role that it played in bringing the community together and educating the children. This was only a glimpse, though. There are more than 200 Armenian churches in Iran, and most of them are historically valuable. They have been the reason behind the Armenians' active participation in the Iranian society.
Armenians and Muslims have been living in Tehran side by side for centuries, and these churches are a symbol of their peaceful coexistence.
Gizumish Ahmadi for Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast round the clock for listeners across the globe. The English channel of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting can be heard via shortwave, internet, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,710 kilohertz every day on 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in the Southern Africa can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 11,740 kilohertz every day on 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Iran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the English channel of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. You can also listen to the radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box 19395-6767 Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means.
Thank you.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, a believer is like a mirror. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, welcome to A to Z here on IB English Radio. It's me, Sister Zainab, and obviously the title, Believer is a Mirror, is a sort of, let's say it's quite a broad topic. What I mean by that is that to some extent, when we are surrounded, if we have some good believers around us, they can obviously tell us, sort of almost reflect back. Oh, in being with them, in being in their company, we can become aware of, you know, anything that we're doing that is good, but also even more importantly, really, they can also make us aware of any things that we maybe need to work on. And look, I've had this idea. There's a beautiful little story from the life of the famous Iranian martyr Hamid Bakari. So he is one of the famous martyrs from the Iranian Holy Defense. And so his wife and Hamid, they used to keep a joint notebook. And both of them would write in this notebook sort of what maybe we'd call constructive criticisms or feedback about each other for sort of improving each other's character. So I was just trying to think, well, what could that be? So it could be, for example, with a couple, maybe if the spouses come, let's say the spouses come home and maybe just brought something from the bakery because maybe you remembered that, I remember my wife really likes that sort of cake and just turns up without being asked and has just brought the favorite cake. So, you know, that's a nice little thing. We could, that would be worth writing in a notebook. Any sort of beautiful little traits and habits that people have. And then, of course, when it comes to the select flaws, if we're to write down sort of flaws or anything that's not so good, so what could that be, for example? Welcome back to A to Z here on IRB English Radio with me, Sister Zainab. And obviously, I'm talking about the idea that the believers are like mirrors to each other. And I've referred to a little story from the life of the famous martyr Amid Bakari and this notebook that he and his wife would keep. And obviously, the idea that we could actually sort of, well, he and his wife did, but we could literally do something like that and write in this book. Well, we could do it, for example, with a spouse. We could do it even like in a family. Might be a nice way of doing it, to sort of draw people's attention to what we're doing well and what we maybe need to work on. So, for example, like one of my friends, I remember she was literally upset a whole day, sadly, because someone had snapped at a family member, had once snapped at her in the morning. And, you know, something like that we could even write in a notebook, because many of us, we're not aware of the impact of our, well, maybe more so with our actions, but maybe not even with them, but for sure with our words, we're not always aware of our impact. So if we had a notebook and we could literally write in there, oh, look, so-and-so snapped at me this morning and I found it really upsetting. You know, if the other person were to read that, they might think, oh, okay, I wasn't even aware I snapped. So, you know, it does help a bit. So, interestingly, with regard to the notebook of Hamid Bakari and his wife, so Hamid Bakari had written lots of comments for his wife, so probably good comments, and also just maybe little things that he thought she could improve on. And strangely enough, so his wife hadn't written down any flaws for her husband. She actually couldn't think of any flaws for her husband. So isn't that beautiful? You know, this is obviously where we'd like to get, that when we think of one of our friends, a family member, a spouse, fellow believers, there is nothing there. It's just good. And obviously our martyrs exemplify that anyway, every single one of them. So inshallah, this is just a reminder, just a little method for people to use maybe, inshallah. And I look forward to welcoming you to another episode of A to Z here on IRB English Radio. And farewell for now. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of A to Z. And for more information, please also visit our website at www.iranradio.ir.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,710 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent. On FM, 91.5 megahertz for Iran. You can also listen to the English channel of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. You can also listen to the radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box 19395,
1-6767 Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our radio quality and other means.
Chased by wolves, followed by a hawk. On the battlefield, you took your final walk. It took my breath when you said goodbye. But then again, heroes never die. Your final words were stay the course. Trust in God. The everlasting source. Don't give in to the enemy's plots. Resist with faith. Go against the odds. Your way I follow. Oh, my hero. Unbreakable soul, unstoppable power. Until the last breath, you never surrendered. Unshakable faith, unwavering sacrifice. Make you the hero we'll remember forever. Your blood was spilled, but it nourished my roots. I then became a tree. Unbreakable soul, unstoppable power, until the last breath you never surrender. Unshakable faith, unwavering sacrifice, make you the hero we'll remember forever. A hero.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You are listening to the program Hadith of the Day on Iran Radio with Sheikh Danish, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Salam and welcome to this episode of the Hadith of the Day, where we delve into a profound reminder about the inevitability of death and the fleeting nature of life. The words resonate deeply from Imam Ali alayhi salam. Know that you will leave this world and depart from it. Reflect upon those who once said, "Who is stronger than us?" They were carried to their graves not as guests, but as those who have departed. They were laid to rest in the earth, receiving the dust as their shrouds and the soil as their coffins. They are neighbors who do not answer calls, nor do they prevent harm. They neither rejoice in good fortune nor despair in times of drought. They are all one, and yet they are alone. So this powerful reflection encourages us to contemplate our existence and the legacy we leave behind. Let's explore this message through the lens of psychology, spirituality, and practical wisdom. Understanding our mortality can significantly impact our lives. Research shows that people who regularly contemplate death often lead more meaningful lives. This concept is known as mortality salience, the awareness that death is inevitable, prompting us to cherish relationships, pursue passions, and align our actions with our values. So think of individuals who, after experiencing a near-death event, prioritize family and meaningful experiences over material pursuits. This shift often leads to deeper happiness and fulfillment. The Quran reminds us, as we begin the first creation, we will repeat it. It is a promise binding upon us. Indeed, we will do it. This verse reinforces the idea of resurrection and the transient nature of our current lives. It urges us to act righteously in preparation for what comes next. So this narration emphasizes the inevitable end we all face. They are carried to their graves, neighbors who do not respond. So consider how often we delay important conversations with loved ones, thinking there will always be time. This narration challenges us to value those moments. Reflect on your legacy. Nurture relationships. Prioritize values. These are the practical steps that we can take. So death is not an end, but a transformation. By acknowledging our mortality, we can lead more intentional lives. Until next time, reflect on your journey, stay true to your values, and embrace the light in every day. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
You just listened to the program Hadith of the Day on Iran Radio with Sheikh Danish, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin.
Bring us out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.